In the dressing room with Johannes Moser, who is a soloist this week with the Philadelphia Orchestra, I'm Bliss Mickelson, and Mr. Moser is doing the Elgar Cello Concerto, a work that has entered the repertoire quite handily in the last 40, 50 years now, and it's very much a part of the standard repertoire, happily, because it's an amazing work. Mr. Moser, thank you for spending a little time with us.
Thank you.
The Elgar Concerto, I think I've done it twice in my career as a bass player, mm-hmm. and I remember it as a rather melancholy work, and born out of the First World War.
That is true. It was written in 1919, just after the war. Elgar himself was not in the best state. He had just gotten out of the hospital, and urban legend has it that he came home and he opened the piano for the first time after being at the hospital and just played those first opening notes that we hear in the concerto. And that sort of became the theme. So we can literally say that this piece is really born out of a very interesting personal state, but also general state of the time. And when I play this piece, I very much think of a fantastic book of Stefan Zweig, which is in German is called Die Welt von gestern, so that's probably like the world from yesterday, where he describes old Europe, you know, Europe from the turn of the century, of Hugo von Hofmannsthal, of Strauss, of Mahler, Sigmund Freud, all these great revolutions that were going on at the time, socially, intellectually, musically, and where, you know, Elgar thought with the end of the First World War, that's all over. And to a certain extent, it was. And so this is really his farewell to that time.
It was one of his last major orchestral works, as I recall.
That is correct. I think after that, he barely composed and he did not land a hit such as the Elgar Concerto after that.
Yeah, and the premiere apparently didn't go all that well, from what I understand. It was an under-rehearsed orchestra and there were problems, but subsequently he recorded it with Beatrice Harrison, I think her name was.
That is true, yeah. And this recording exists now, you can buy it on CD, and it is remarkable, of course, because everybody is so focused on the recording by Jacqueline Dupré. But actually, this recording with Beatrice Harrison is much more interesting because he himself, the composer, is conducting. And so it is astounding to me how few cellists actually know about this recording, about this document. And there is only very few film material of Elgar conducting. But the bits and pieces there are, you can find them easily on YouTube, is that he was certainly a gentleman on stage, but he was very much in command of an orchestra, you know?
Yes, I heard a recording of a rehearsal he did in 1927. I mm-hmm. think it was the Second Symphony he was working on.
Right.
And you can barely hear him, but he definitely is in command, and as you said, very much a gentleman.
Yes.
He wouldn't demand, say, I shall ask the double basses for this, I shall ask for that.
Yeah.
And yet he got results. Yeah. And the recordings that I've heard that he conducted, the tempi differ a lot from what you hear today.
Right? Yeah, well, you know, another key for me is looking at his manuscript, which is also now available as a facsimile. So you have all these documents available for you, and still the interpretations that you hear today differ so much from the materials that are available. So that is a big question mark for me, why that is the case.
Yeah, and this is a concerto in four movements, which in itself is a little unusual.
Mm, very true. Well, the form is that the first and second movement are connected and third and fourth are also connected.
Yeah.
So in a way, it is almost more like an elegy, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, or a very long symphonic poem, perhaps.
For sure. That hits it on the head, yeah. You know what also strikes me as very interesting is that when you see Elgar, as we talked earlier, in rehearsal, being the gentleman that he is, and looking at Britain at that time, behavior was much more restrained, you know. I mean, also when you compare somebody who was conducting at the same time, like a Toscanini, who would just yell at the orchestra, you know,
yeah.
Something that is also not done so much anymore today. But if you compare the two, and then you keep in mind how incredibly emotional and almost overboard that concerto is going, like, that was really an extraordinary method of expression, this piece for him. And therefore, I think it must have been very close to his heart because he put all his heart and soul into it.
You certainly hear that in this concerto. And the melancholy, even in the scherzo, never completely leaves.
Yeah.
You always kind of hear it in the background there.
That's true, but it's so smart that he actually incorporates this very lively scherzo, because just as Tchaikovsky, he was a master of drama. And he understood if we really want to throw somebody emotionally down the well, you need to climb up higher. Yeah, so he carries you high up with emotion. With, you know, when you look at Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, for example, you have this really almost aggressively emphatic third movement, and then he really shatters you with that finale. Yeah, and Elgar, I think, is taking up the same idea, like, you know, some positivity, some smiles, and then he really stabs your heart. Wagner was another one of those champions of drama, of course. So I am very much interested in how composers actually not only put form and melody and you know, invention on paper, but composers that are actually aware of the drama that they evoke, and Elgar was a master of that.
Now you're working with Donald Runicles on this, and you're collaborating with him. You've put your heads together on how you've conceived this piece, I assume.
Absolutely. We had, before we went into the first orchestra rehearsal, we had a meeting, just the two of us. And I'm glad that he kept that rehearsal quite simple, because, you know, when the orchestra is not playing, you can have as many ideas as you want. But once the orchestra is there, you almost have to adjust your ideas completely, because there, with every orchestra, there is a different form of physicality. You know, I played this piece in Ottawa with the National Arts Center Orchestra, a very fine orchestra, but, you know, much smaller string section, much more, you know, coming out of a Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven tradition, so to speak, you know, and maybe not as rough, symphonic, lush sound as you find here in Philadelphia. And just by the change of sound, you have to adjust to that, you know, if you want or not. So we can have as many ideas as we want in the practice room. Once we are on the podium, that's where you really need to find what the truth is going to be in the evening.
Well, there's a lot of give and take, I imagine, at rehearsals.
Absolutely.
And the hall makes a difference, I imagine, too.
Big difference. And of course, you know, I am 1 against 80, so balance is always a big issue. That's why I take such pleasure in playing the electric cello every once in a while, because if I'm not heard, I just go to the amplifier and I turn it to 11.
There you go.
And all my problems are solved.
Have you recorded this yet?
No, I'm going to record it next June in Geneva with OSR Orchestra. This is a piece where I wanted to wait to record it. And I mean, I've just recorded the Dvořák and Lalo concerto, and I've recorded 15 discs before that, just because I wanted to learn the craft of recording. And with these pieces, you know, nowadays, with a real production, you maybe get one or two shots, you know, and you want to get it right. And that's why it took me some time.
Well, I wish you all the best with this. Johannes Moser with the Elgar Cello Concerto at the Kimmel Center and the Philadelphia Orchestra. You're headed out to the stage, and I'm going to be right out in the audience listening.
Fantastic.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Thank you so much. Me too.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.